Hello, everybody. My name is James Lujan. I'm the Department Chair of Cinematic Arts and Technology at the Institute of American Indian Arts, and I want to introduce you to Sydney Freeland, the director and executive producer of Echo. Let's give her a big hand.
Hello, hello. Let me see.
So I was just reminded of your connection to IAI in a couple of ways, that you went through the Disney program way back in the day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we shot a bunch of short films at IAI. I remember spending, I think it was 10 days. We were working on a short film at IAI. We lived off the McDonald's dollar value menu here in Santa Fe to get our short film done. But yeah, I've probably done half dozen short films with IAI.
Great. So everybody here got a chance to see the first two episodes. And I was wondering, what was it about the story and character that got you excited about doing this project?
That's Marvel, you know? Yeah. First of all, hello, hi. My name is Sydney Freeland. Yat Aisha, Sydney Freeland Aisha. Bilgan Shle, Adotoba, Vashchim, Bilgan Dashnala, Adotoba, Najdashche, Nat Najilja, Dan Nasha. My name is Sydney Freeland. I am Navajo and Scottish, and I'm from Gallup, New Mexico, about 2.5 hours, 3 hours from here, born and raised. And yeah, pretty wild to be back here in New Mexico and working on a Marvel show. I think to answer your question, you know, I think when the project first came about, it was Marvel's first native character, and I say character because, you know, the character of Echo is a villain. And so that was actually one of the things that was most interesting. I was like, oh wow, this isn't like Captain America. Like, she's a, you know, she works for Kingpin, she works for Wilson Fisk. And for me, that was the most interesting thing, right? Because it was like, there's all these shades of gray within that, and you can explore so many different levels. And, you know, and also to then bring in the native side and then layer in the Choctaw side of things. It was terrifying, and then it became exhilarating.
Yeah, what was it like for you? You started out as an independent film director. What was it like for you working for a major studio like Marvel, making that transition?
I mean, I think, you know, for those of you, there's probably some film folks here in the audience, you know, like, it's interesting because, you know, you work on a student film, you work on a short film, you get an episode of TV, you do a feature, you do an independent feature film, and you work in Marvel. The process is the process, right? Get your shots, get your performances, make your days. And so I think but it's actually those the independent movies where you kind of learn how to make something out of nothing, because even though it's Marvel, and yes, you have resources, and yes, we have money, and yes, we have, you know, much more at our disposal, you still have to be creative, and you still have to solve, and there's still going to be times when there's like, well, we don't have money for, like, we can only blow up 4 windows, and you want 8, that's not going to happen, stop asking, you know, but then you find a creative way, so, well, what if we did this, and we could actually get 6 windows, and, you know, and so that's where, like, the independent film background really helps. I think at the end of the day, it's still, like, the process is the process, you know, director, actor, first AD, cinematographer, and, yeah, it's the same but different.
Can you talk about the efforts to ensure Indigenous representation on this show?
Oh yeah. Representation was extremely important, in front of, behind the camera, not only on the Native and Indigenous side, but also on the deaf side as well too. You know, I'm not deaf, but our lead actress Lako Cox is, and that was something we really wanted to honor and embrace with this. And so if you notice, when you were watching the two episodes, there were subtitles, and that was for people who are deaf and hard of hearing, you know, and so we wanted to, we did have respect for Alakwa and deaf audiences as well too. So, but I think as far as the native side is concerned, you know, it was, when I came on board, the character was Choctaw, and one of the first things that I wanted to do was engage the Choctaw Nation. You know, I think that's one of the things that, you know, Traditionally, it's sort of like, it's almost like the last step in the process. It's like, hey, we wrote this thing about like a guy that goes to the Lakota reservation and he like becomes one with nature. And like, will you sign off on this and read this script? And just say yes. And yeah, someone knows out there. Close to home, yeah. One of the first things I did when I came on board is once we had our department heads is we all went out to Oklahoma. And I went to Durant, which is Choctaw Nation, Choctaw band, or Oklahoma band of Choctaw. And we basically met with the Choctaw Nation, presented the film to them, said, hey, listen, this is we have this really cool story. We have this really cool idea. It's going to be different. It's not going to be, it's going to be, you know, a little bit darker, a little bit mature, but we think there's a really great story behind it. And basically asked their permission, you know? And I think that's what we realized. We kind of pitched the whole thing to them. And then, you know, we sat across on the other side of the table and we were sort of like, it was almost like a little bit of blank stares looking back. And I realized like, oh wow, I don't know that either one of us has been in this position before. And so basically what we said is like, no, we're not here to tell you what we're going to do. We're here to ask your permission and create a dialogue because we want your input. We want your advice. We want to know, you know, we want to be able to tell a story, but we also want to be respectful and authentic to Choctaw language, culture, and tradition. You know, I'm not Choctaw, I'm Navajo. So again, that was one thing for me, and even with the language, and there's all sorts of things built in with that. And then again, you know, you go over on the deaf side as well too. It was like one of the first things that we did is we all started taking ASL classes. Myself, my department heads, and I remember when Alakwa came in, I was like so excited. I practiced in front of the mirror. I was like, my name is, and I spell my name out. And how are you? You know, and she was like, she was so kind, And then I saw every single person in every other department that she worked on did the same thing to her, but she was so kind and she was so accommodating. But one of the things that really came out of taking ASL classes was this: it was this really great positive consequence. It actually influenced our visual style. So if you notice in the film, right, I'm gonna set this down real quick, but. And the reason for that is because when you sign here, you sign there, and the signing is the text, and the face is the subtext. Whereas if you're shooting a traditional actor, like this could be a close-up here, right? And so we realized that, no, we need to be able to see the signing, see the face to get the full emotional context of what's being portrayed and represented. And so this became a close-up in our show. And because that's a close-up for Alakwa, that doesn't mean that Vincent gets different treatment. That doesn't mean that Cody Lightning gets one of these, you know? So again, like I think that was one of the great positive consequences that came out of like this sort of effort to be authentic. Again, there's other things involved in that, but those are a couple things.
Well, that's interesting, because I was gonna ask you that, you know, because you're the director of the pilot, you're responsible for setting the look and tone for the show for the entire season. No matter who else comes in as a director, they're going to be following your lead, right?
Yeah, that's one of the great things about it. Doing a pilot, you know, you get to establish the look and tone and feel.
So what ultimately are you hoping that audiences, both native and non-native, take away after watching this series?
After watching the series, what was you all saw through episode two, right? Episode two, and then did you all see like the teaser for like the sizzle for the rest of the season?
Yeah.
That came out? Okay, yeah. I'm trying to think how to answer that question without spoiling anything. But I hope that people will take away, you know, on a broader scale, I hope people get to see the MCU in a different light. You know, I think because one of the things that we're really proud of is that this is not, this is a very intimate story. It's a very, it's not the fate of the universe at stake here that you'll see in the following episodes that come after episode two. It's not the fate of the cosmos. You know, it's about the fate of a family. It's about the fate of a community. And again, I'm trying to figure out how to answer that without spoiling anything. But I think the other thing I'm just really excited for people to see is that, like, I think those first two episodes, you're just getting to see a little bit of what Alakwa can do. And I think people are going to be blown away what she does in those last episodes, because she's starting off from a place of, you know, she's kind of like, she's almost a stereotype, you know, she's like that stoic sort of like reserved kind of native, you know, kind of trope. And then we're going to proceed to just crack her wide open over the rest of the series. And it's going to be a lot of fun and a wild ride.
Great. So before I open the it up to audience questions, I have one more question to ask you. Because there are a lot of IA film students in the audience. And I was wondering if you had any advice for them in terms of building a career in the film industry.
I think it's pretty surreal to be sitting here. I don't feel like I'm that far removed from being a film student myself. I'd say, if I was going to give advice, just go and make stuff. Live off the McDonald's dollar value menu for a week to get a short film made. Make stuff, make stuff, make stuff. I think, case in point, the first feature film I ever did was a film called Drunk Town's Finest, back in 2013, I think. And thanks. You can get it on bootleg at the laundromat in Farmington, I believe. I got some texts in. They're selling your movie on bootleg in Farmington. I was like, all right, cool. Yeah. I hope they can pay rent. But getting that film made, the process of getting it made was extremely difficult. And I remember I was talking to a fellow director friend, and I was sort of complaining to her, feeling sorry for myself kind of, and about like, I can't get this film made. We can't get funding. We can't get financing. Nobody wants to be a part of this. And she was sort of like, I was like, I just want to do something. I just want to make something. And she said, well, basically, long story short, she said kind of like, well, stop feeling sorry for yourself. Stop crying about it, and just, you want to shoot something, you don't have to shoot a feature, go shoot a short film, just make something. And that resulted, I did a short film called Hoverboard, which we shot over 2 days in Albuquerque. It was about a little girl that wants to make a hoverboard from Back to the Future 2. And literally it was just, I just wanted to make something. And long story short, what I found out when I pitched on the Marvel, on this Marvel show, you know, before you go in and pitch, you know, my agent and my manager, they send in like these episodes of TV, and here's the feature work. And then I went in and I pitched to Kevin Feige and gave him the whole song and dance, you know, like, this is how it's going to look, it's going to feel, and you're going to see Echo, and then Kingpin comes in, and, you know, and then I finished the whole thing. And then Kevin, when he was done, he said, you know, no, we like your pitch, we like your everything. And, you know, it was interesting, like, we asked to see work samples, and your agent and your manager sent in a short film you did called Hoverboard, and it was awesome. And I, of all the TV work, I would not have expected that, but that Kevin fucking Feige saw the short film that I did, and it contributed, if not was the reason I got this show. So I would say, go out, make stuff. You don't know what it'll lead to. Make stuff, make stuff, make stuff.
That's great advice. So any questions? I can't see you, but stand up and ask a question.
That's loud. I might not be a film student, but I'm Navajo Cherokee and, right, not Cherokee, Choctaw and Creek. So, along with her disability, what can you do to, I'm not saying for you directly, but can there be more disability outcomes of Marvel, and also just in reality more production of different disabilities, such as Echo being deaf, because we don't get enough What's the word?
Representation?
Yeah, habilitation. Yeah. And that kind of makes the, like, they don't know what to do and they don't have the actors for it. And I'm kind of like, you do have the actors and you do have the reputation for it. But for this one, why is it because the actor is Choctaw? Or is it just, is my question a little bit weird?
No, not at all. I think the question is, is there more opportunities, or can there be more opportunities for representation, not only Native different tribes, but also people with disabilities? Is that kind of the idea? Yeah. I will say absolutely, unequivocally, yes. You know, I think, and this is something that I kind of am guilty of myself, you know, like I'm Native American, I'm transgender, right? And so those are two communities that are traditionally misrepresented on film. And, you know, I had the opportunity to shadow on a show called Pose. And in that show, it's a lot of, trans women as leads. And at the time, the conversation going into that is like, where are we going to find actors and actresses to be authentic to this community, representative? And when I was on set with everybody, it was like, oh, wow, there is talent in the community. You just have to look, you know. And then to bring it over to Echo, you know, if full disclosure just to sort of express my kind of like my short-sightedness, I have a pair of director's friends that they're called Bert and Birdie, and they were directing on a show called Hawkeye. This is January 2020, so it was like right just as COVID was about to hit, and I got an email from them, and they said, hey, Sydney, do you know any deaf Native American actresses? And I was like, no, good luck with that. And just kind of like, I didn't know what it was at the time, but they were directing on Hawkeye, and they were looking for an actress who was deaf and who was Native. And again, like, you just have to put the call out almost. And it was answered. And even in this show, we had deaf writers in the writer's room. And then one of the things that we learned as we were writing the character is that deafness can be hereditary. And so the mother was, if we were going to be authentic, could also be deaf. And so again, we put a call out to find someone who was both deaf and Native. And we found another amazing actress, Ketriana McKenzie, or Ketriana Zervogel. So I think the answer is absolutely there is. But you can't get the roles if you don't have the content. So I would say, you know, write that script, shoot that short film, and carve a place out for that additional representation.
Unfortunately, that's all the time we have. I'm told that we have to wrap it up.
All right.
But Sydney, thank you very much for coming and showing us your great work. Congratulations.